Thank you, Charles, for the introduction, and also thanks God for the testimony and the sharing from Pastor Dennis, and also the song that we've sung this morning. And you know, I was thinking while I was sitting down there, maybe, you know, I don't really need to preach that much. Just we're all encouraged already, and we're all ready to go. Maybe I just cut it very short this morning, and hope I can do that. And when I was sitting down there, and I was thinking about, wow, really, you know, think back in all thousands of history, how God has been preparing people to do his work. And even though in a time that we couldn't understand, even though in a time, the very bad time in Turkey and also in Bulgaria and also underground, you know, in the basement and by 15 or 14 years old girl as a Sunday school teacher. How did it all happen? And today I hope that the message and also the scripture that we're talking about this morning will be an encouragement for all ourselves to think about our life and to think about maybe at some point you think about your, in Chinese we say there's a second half of your life, right? And we reach a point that we think about how we try to think again how we should live ahead in our own life. And today we talk about a little bit aggressive, actually from chapter 2 of Exodus to chapter 4, but I'm not going to preach the whole thing here, but I try to get some main points over there. So we all heard about Moses, right? Moses is a passionate, and also he is a flawed character at the same time. And he sounds like a hero, but also we can see there's a lot of difficulties in his life too. He tries to rescue his people. In verse 11, chapter 2, verse 11 to 14. Let us have a look here. Is the slide on? Oh, yes, thank you. So we can see that Moses kills Egyptian who was beating up a Hebrew. So in verse 12, it says, looking this way and that way and seeing no one, he killed an Egyptian and hid it in the sand. So his action lead to his exile in the land of Midian for the next 40 years. So in verse 15 it says, when Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian. So as a result, Moses seems to have become disappointed with his life, as indicated by the name that he gave to his son. His son is called Gershom, right? In verse 21 it says, I have become a foreigner in a foreign land. So we can see how frustrated he is with his life. I'm not sure if you have ever felt frustrated with yourself or disappointed in yourself, in your life at some point. I did. And maybe I would say when I was almost reaching my 40, I have a very early mid-age crisis in my life. And I was starting to think about, what is life is all about for myself. So later in the same chapter, Moses rescues the daughter of Jethro. And the word rescue here is used to describe what Moses did. And the word rescue has become a significant theme in the whole book of the Exodus and all the story to come. So later in the chapter 3, God speaks to Moses and used the same word to describe his plan to rescue the Israelites. So we can see that Moses has a passion for justice. He has a passion for his own people. However, Moses looked left and he looked right and think about how he can do all these things, but he forgot. But he didn't even know to look up to God. He dealt with the problem by committing crime, committing sin to kill another person. That he was not assigned to do that. He revenged by violence and took the Israelite that he was unaware that God was having a plan for the Israelite and God was about to save the Israelite with his plan to redeem his people. The Israelite groaned in their slavery and cried out for help. He didn't know that. He didn't even think about God has already been listening to the prayer in the same time. When Moses was not aware what God was about to do, but he did it in his own way. It seems to be a delay and causes Moses personal disappointment in this when he was he was fleeing to the land of a stranger's land. And for the past 80 years, in fact, without Moses himself being noticed, God was actually preparing him for redeeming his covenant people. So now Moses, as a departed shepherd and as a sojourner, he settled down and married a wife called Zipporah, spent his days shepherding his father-in-law's flocks. And there was nothing much happening in these 40 years of very dull days. So after 40 years, Moses turned 80, and a significant event happened. While he was leading the flock, and he arrived Horeb, and now unaware of what was about to happen. And now, an ordinary day that marked a very new start of a life-changing event that he's about to meet the Almighty in his life. So it was there, in the mountain of God, that Moses caught sight of a burning bush, and therefore made that sight truly remarkable is that the fact that the bush was not consumed by the fire. I assume that maybe the fire was there, but there's nothing carbonized, there's no smoke coming out. And intrigued and drawn to this supernatural phenomenon, and Moses approached to the bush to investigate and see what is going on there. The text says here, Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see the strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. As Moses drew near, a living figure spoke to him from within the flames. And then the text makes it very clear that it is God himself speaking to him. We don't have much time to go through the whole chapter here, but there are a few things that is worth us to notice and what that is speaking about God himself. First, God declared that he is the God of the past. In verse 6, there you go. He said, I am the God of your father. Moses named his second son Eliezer, which means God is my help. In the later chapter, in chapter 18, and you can see that Moses named his second son this. My father's God was my helper. He saved me from the sword of Pharaoh. Now being a stranger in a foreign land, he might still wish that the God of his ancestor would help, though he might feel a bit removed from this God, that he has a very little idea about this God. But now God came into scene, came in this one of the very dull days of his life, and God declared to Moses, I am the God of your father. And Moses wouldn't expect the help of God. It is how he was hoping, from what we can learn from how he named his second son. God is my help. Father is my God, is my help. Maybe he's hoping God is helping him in some way, but he didn't expect that the help of this God that he wished for would be much greater than he would ever expect in his life. And not just that, and God emphasized that, I am the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Here is the God of Genesis. Now here we are in Exodus, but God is already in the Exodus, and God of the whole history is not the God of that moment. It's that God before Moses, before everything came into the past. And this is the same God who had made a promise to Abraham to make his children into a great nation, to bless the nations through Abraham on all the earth. And that's the God who now speaks from the burning bush. The God who seems to be remote to Moses. And now he's speaking to Moses through this burning bush. In verse 7 and 10 it says, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of Egyptians and bring them out of that land. And so now I am I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Isn't that what Moses had in his heart 40 years ago? But God was even taking this further. I'm now not just freeing my people from Egypt, but also taking them to the land that I promised to your ancestor, Abraham. Someone has said, living without God's plan for our life is like sewing with a needle without thread in it, or writing one biography with a pen empty of ink. God's plan is all about redemption of humankind. God's plan transcends our understanding, even in our disappointment. In our frustration, God has never stopped preparing us and preparing the circumstances for his use. The only question is that, do we believe so? Do we believe that even though that we are disappointed in our life, the circumstances seem not to be in the right place? Do we believe so God is actually preparing everything, including ourselves, for his use, for his great redemption plan in history? Titus chapter 2, 14 says, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us to redeem us from all wickedness and to purify for himself a people that are his very own, eager to do what is good. The concept of redemption in the Bible is deeply rooted in the idea of the deliverance, restoration, and salvation. It refers to the act of God delivering humanity from the power and the consequences of our own sins. In other words, we are not redeemed for fulfilling our own passion. We are redeemed for God's use, for his plan. Human understanding of delivery is about getting out of our miserable situation. But God's redemption plan is also about molding the character of a person that is good for his use, being part of his eternal plan. So brothers and sisters, Moses was saved from water and later from the hand of Pharaoh from his sword. And now God has redeemed his past failure. He had done something wrong, caused him to be a sojourner in a strange place for 40 years. And now God is redeeming all these things and preparing him to be the deliverance of his own people. Likewise, God has also redeemed not only you, our own individual. He's also redeeming our past, our experiences. Some consequences in our life may not be made right again, but our life has become a story for God's use. A life that a story that God will use to save other people. God redeemed your past, your mistakes, your weaknesses, and whatever that you have experienced, even your education, your academic, your business experiences. Everything, when you are redeemed the time, that will be for God's use. Moses was being prepared to be a deliverer, a lawmaker, a leader, and a judge. And it's the same for us. All our life, no matter what we have experienced, the day when you are redeemed, everything will become an instrument for God's good work. That's what we have just heard this morning. And man, Pastor Dennis, he redeemed, and he's now being sent to the UK for $500,000 of the Turkish over there. So what is Moses' response? For the 40 years of life in the land of Midian, has Moses lost his confidence? It seems to be the case. Perhaps it is already too old for Moses, after all, he's 80 years old by then, to take on the task. He became so reluctant. So Moses responds in verse 11. And I will need the slide here. Thank you. So who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said in verse 12, I will be with you. Moses asked, who am I? But God says, it's not about you, Moses. No one can ever do my work without me. Here you have to truly understand what this powerful statement, I will be with you, really means. The simple statement is a promise. And then it becomes part of God's name. Because the word I will be, or yeh in Hebrew, is exactly the same when God says, I am who I am. And this can be translated as, I will be that I will be. And this is a declaration of God himself, I am who I am, the very personal name. In the Bible, the word Yahweh, and this is what we pronounce, the word the Lord, when we read the Bible and we see the Lord. Although we don't exactly know how the Old Testament people pronounce this word Yahweh. And the word Yahweh very likely is the third person of I am, a yay. I am, when we're referring I am, the third person will be He is, Yahweh. Hope you can you can follow me here. And but the Old Testament, the Jews, they don't want to say out the name because of the respect of God. So they will say the Lord instead of saying Yahweh. So that's why we don't know how this word exactly how it is pronounced. So the Jew will say the Lord. So whenever we see this word, the Lord, spelled in capital case in our Bible, it is the name of God. It's not his title. It's not a title. It's his name, Yahweh. So when we read this word in uppercase, we know that this is the name God used to sign the covenant with his people. Name is very important in the Bible. Our names is also important when we have to sign a contract with the other people. God says here, it's not about who you are, Moses. It's all about I am. I am has sent you. I am became the new name of God here. In verse 15, God reminds Moses who he is when God says, I am. Say to the Israelite, the Lord, the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. God is a God who is always faithful to keep his covenant, even when human unable to keep our part. God is an eternal God. He's the self-exist God. He's infinite. It's not that he needs us, but it is us who need him. When all creatures must depend on God, God depends on nothing that he depends. He's even powerful enough to keep us in the covenant, while we often fail in our part. And this is the kind of God that he made an unfailing covenant to his people, including us here. So in the business field, whenever we made an agreement with other parties, we had to use the company's seal, like a chop, on our signature. And it was to make clear that both parties and will have the authorization representative that could bind their company to the terms and conditions to be on the agreement. So the company's seal is used to authenticate their contract, apart from the seal and also signatories must also be endorsed by their organization. So it means that this company is trustworthy and that guy is endorsed by his company. And all the agreement and everything or terms there will be, they are all agreed on and they will act upon this. By making sure that both parties will have the seal and an endorsement in place, we can be sure that this agreement can be carried out. A covenant is different than a contract. A contract is an agreement between two equal parties. A covenant is a binding relationship between usually involving protection and also paying tribute between a higher power and a lower power, such as a stronger nation than a low and a weaker nation. God signed this covenant with Abraham, soon, he will establish another Mosaic covenant with the Israelite people through Moses, endorsing his signature, I am, with his eternality. What would be bigger than this? God endorsed his name with his eternality. When Moses was drawn to the burning bush, a flame that does not burn out, like his resources are inexhaustible, his power unwearied. He never needs to take a break to recharge his energy. He doesn't sleep. His love never fades away. As 40 years have passed by, Moses has lost his confidence. It is time for Moses to shift his confidence from his own ability, his own passion, his own self, to this great I am that will never be weakened or even a little bit. So, brothers and sisters, when we fail, God has all the reasons to terminate our relationship, just like how we do it in the business field. But our God is gracious, always faithful and powerful to keep his covenant. He knows well we will not be able to keep our part without him. He came to us to help us to keep the covenant with him. We cannot do it by ourselves. So he came and helped, and this is the God that we have our covenant with. And our confidence should not be based on ourself, based on our great I am. And that's why Jesus said, without me, you can do nothing. Moses needs time to process all these things that happen before his eyes. You know, he's a great I am, the God of eternal God is speaking to him. In the first half of the chapter 4, which we don't have time to go through everything today, we know Moses was kind of arguing with God and reluctant to go. So he gave some excuses. Is he going to do the work? Moses kind of saying that they are not going to believe me, even though that you send me. I'm not eloquent. I'm not very good with my speech. And finally he asked, okay, come on, please send someone else, not me. I just don't want to do it. Maybe he's just too old, 80 years old. But this great I am, you know, he kind of underestimated this God. He made all the necessary arrangement before, you know, the excuses come before the excuses Moses has been seen here. He even preparing his older brother for his assistant. So not much in an army now, and an 80-year-old man, a Midian wife, two sons and a donkey and a stick, and even the older brother, what kind of team is that is going to take on the imperial power in Egypt? So whatever Moses was thinking about when he set off to Egypt, we know that God was thinking, but we know what God was thinking and what God is having in his plan. And God got his plan and told Moses in advance. So in verse 21 to 23, it is kind of a very abbreviated summary of what Moses will experience in Egypt. So let me just read this out. So when you return to Egypt, see that you perform before Pharaoh all the wonders and I have given you the power to do. But I will harden his heart so that he will not let the people go. Then say to Pharaoh, and this is what the Lord says, Israel is my firstborn son, and I told you, let my son go, so he may worship me. But you refuse to let him go, so I will kill your firstborn son. Two things stand out here. And there's a lot of things been happening here, but I will just point out two things. First, God calls the Israelite his firstborn son. In verse 22, it's the first time in the Bible that the relationship between God and his people being described in those terms, with God as the father and the Israelite as the son. And not only just that, not only just any son, it's the firstborn son, which means that and they will receive an inheritance, and also there will be more other sons to come. And in the Old Testament, when they used the term father, it represents God's love and care for them as his children. It also means that they need to respect this authority and obey him because he is the father. So provision, love, and also obedience to authority are the two aspects of this relationship between the father and son. And now we can see in the Old Testament. And the second thing that we can spot from this passage is this. Though Moses, God instructed Pharaoh to go beyond simply freeing his son. Through Moses, God is going to free the people from Pharaoh beyond simply freeing his son. He says, let my son go that they may worship or serve me. The Hebrew word serve means both serving and also worship. So it's not just about a son being free from slavery. A larger point is this. The Israelite is now enslaved to a wrong master, and they need to be released from serving the wrong master and came and to be redirected to serve a worship the right master, Yahweh, the great God I am, and their true living God, their father and their king. So here we can see that God is starting to establish a proper relationship with his people, and all start with Moses. So in the following passages, there comes a moment that is shocking, also very perplexing, I would say, in verse 24 to 26, when Moses and his family are beginning their journey going back to Egypt, and God here to confront Moses and appears ready to kill him. So let us all read 24 here. It is written, at a lodging place on the way, the Lord met Moses and was about to kill him. And you say, hey, wait, this is the man who God has saved as a baby 80 years ago, and here's the man who has been saved as a turned away prince of Egypt 40 years ago, and this is a man God whom has just managed to persuade and ask him with a great length, ask him to go down to Egypt and to save his people. And he is the man God is sending to the commands to begin a great action of redemption in the Bible until the cross of Christ. And now God met Moses and about to kill him. What is happening here? And the Bible doesn't tell us what exactly happened about Moses. Maybe he has a sudden illness there, or Moses. Anyway, Moses is very close to death. The only quick action of his wife, Zipporah, that saved him. So in verse 25-26 says, but Zipporah took a flint knife, cut off her son's foreskin, and touched Moses' feet with it. And surely you are a bridegroom of blood to me. And she said in 26, so the Lord let him alone. At the time she said bridegroom of blood, referring to circumcision. So what seems clear in these few verses is that at least one of Moses' sons has not been circumcised. So, but why not? And the Bible didn't tell us. Maybe Zipporah, as a Midianite, as a Gentile, she didn't like the idea of circumcising their son when they were just a baby. And now, assuming this younger son must be pretty grown up now. And there are a few more questions that is puzzling us. The first question is this. Why did God want to kill Moses even though one of his sons was not circumcised? And second, why did Zipporah touch Moses' feet with her son's foreskin? And thirdly, what did Zipporah mean when she said, you are a bridegroom of blood to me? Circumcision was a sign of a covenant between God and Abraham's descendants. It meant that all the male in the household, if they're not circumcised, must be cut off in the Old Testament. God required all the male babies to be circumcised at 8 days old. And Moses was responsible for ensuring all the males in the household would be circumcised. And to save Moses' life, Zipporah circumcised one of her grown-up sons. In the land of Midian, it is a custom that the man will only get circumcised just right before they get married or in their age of puberty, never in the 8 days old. So when Moses settled down in Midian, perhaps he may have let go of his Israelite obligation. And by the time he's living there, maybe his wife, as a Gentile wife objection, they didn't do this covenant requirement for his son. However, for here, Zipporah understood that the circumcision their son is circumcising their son is the way necessary to save Moses' life. So she did it, and through perhaps she's not doing it. She did it without not quite willingly. And then she touched Moses' feet with the cut off foreskin. In Hebrew, the word feet could be an euphemism or a subtle saying of a male genital. But we can't be certain here. Some suggest that Zipporah performed the circumcisions at Moses' insistence. So most scholars believe that Zipporah cut off her son's foreskin and threw it at Moses' feet, indicating her reluctance. There you go, I did it, so save my husband. Perhaps this is the case, but we cannot be very sure. But as the phrase, bridegroom of blood, Zipporah may have used the terms how the Midianites call their bridegroom in their time, because they were usually circumcised before they get married. And now, when Moses was about to be killed, what she did, save his husband, is like a bridegroom to her again. Again, it's very difficult to be very sure, but at least we kind of try to get our heads straight and what is all this passage is all about. But one thing, after all this, we can be sure is this. Circumcision signified God's people in the Old Testament time for the Jews. Moses needed this even more important is this. Moses needed to obey before he could lead his people. God is sending Moses back to Egypt, and he is about to establish the law from God's words. He had to circumcise his son and to set a right example and lead others to obey God. As people redeemed for God, we also need to check our past. Check our life, if there are any disobedience in our life. Of course, that doesn't mean that we need to be perfect to become or sinless before we can serve God. That doesn't mean that God, but when there is time, God exposed some sin in our life. We need to put right before we can presume to stand before others. So after this incident, and Moses finally joined Aaron, and they both went to see the elders, and they found that they were all ready for the deliverance. And a new chapter of the Israelites was about to begin, and God was about to declare war on Pharaoh, and life for the Israelites would become more difficult before it would get better later on. And in all this, God is raising a person who can fulfill his task. Moses is not depicted as a courageous and heroic figure here. He could easily defeat the Egyptian. Instead, he has a fear, anxiety, when he was discovered, killed a person, we can see that he's an imperfect people that God chose to use. In Moses' disappointment, in God's timing, God came to Moses and revealed to him that Moses has missed one thing that is very important in his life. God himself, that is what Moses has missed. Maybe God is silent to Moses, but in fact, God has been active all his Moses' life. God continues to hear the prayer of the Israelite. He orchestrates the circumstances and conclusively shows Moses that this is God's redemption plan. It's not Moses' plan. So, as we come to the conclusion of today, when God redeemed us, He not just redeemed us from something. He redeemed us to Himself. Not only will He deliver us, but He also been preparing us to be the instrument for His great redemption plan. You may have some mistake in your life, or maybe you felt disappointment in your life, or you have tried hard, you yield nothing, but you struggle and or you're reluctant to trust. And yet, and only when you know that we can't do it by ourselves, we can only do it by the grace and power of God. And the bottom line of all of this is that when Moses said to God, "Who am I? I can't do it. How can I manage my household? How can I be a good husband? How can I be a good father? How can I be a good worker? How can I do the good work for God?" God said, "This is not about you. It's about the great I am." So where are we today? Are we just like Moses, trying to pursue our own passion, living in a foreign land, feeling remote from God? Or you are feeling distressed in your life. Perhaps we all need to be like Moses, go to the Mount of Horeb and to see the burning bush and to meet God Himself. Let his burning bush to put a burning heart in our life again. Let's pray. Thank God for this wonderful story about Moses. Thank you for saving our life to redeem us from this wicked and this sinful world to use to yourself. Thank you for preparing us even in our own disappointment, even in our own failure. Thank you for all the testimony and all the experiences that we have. I pray that we will all turn this into your hand and you will turn this into your use. In the name of the Son, we pray. Amen.